I-56. Onahola Stringed Instruments is proud to support KKCR. Mickey Sussman has been building Island Koa guitars, ukulele, and violins on Kauai since 1972. Time-honored design and special orders. Prompt and complete restoration, repair, and reforestation. OnaholaStringedInstruments.com or 822-1645.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kasilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Oh yes. Thank you to our underwriters. I also want to give a special thanks to the man who brings us many weeks the sound of these beautiful birds. It's David Kuhn. More of his work can be found at soundshawaiian.com. And just want to read a little bit off the website. Sounds Hawaiian is dedicated to gathering, archiving, and sharing the ancient natural voices of the Aina, the land, to enhance awareness of the unique place of Hawaii in the panoply of life on the earth. And he travels around the Hawaiian Islands capturing those unforgettable sounds that we hear each and every day here on this beautiful archipelago that we call Hawaii. So without further ado, I want to welcome my co-host back to the show. It's super great to have you with us, Eileen.
Thanks so much, Paul. I'm really glad to be here. It's always an honor and an interest of mine. I look forward to our show today, and it's just always a pleasure to tune in.
Yay. Yeah. So how's your garden?
Oh, booming. It's doing great. I have a lot of Brussels sprouts in the ground now.
Yes.
Broccoli, collards, all the brassicas are enjoying themselves so much in this cool weather and getting more and more tasty.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So even here in the subtropics, the change in temperature does affect the taste of the brassicas.
It seems subtle, but
not aware
definitely.
Of that.
And the texture. Yeah.
Wonderful.
They'll become softer, more pliable in the winter, and sweeter. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ooh. Yum, yum.
Yeah.
Can't wait. Well, we're going to jump right in. We have a lot of things on the agenda today, so we'll jump into our celestial session, our look to the heavenly skies above for inspiration and guidance on our planting, harvesting, and other gardening and farming activities, and focusing in on the Hawaiian moon phase brought to us today by my own observations, actually, trying to make sense of my knowledge of the Hawaiian moon phases and also the appearance of that slender crescent moon, which I believe is on the 9th. But at any rate, I did calculate out today's Hawaiian moon to be Huna. And Huna is in the Poipoi, or First Anahulu, or First Hawaiian Moon Week. And she will rise over Kauai today at 3:40 p.m. She'll reach her transit, her highest point in the sky, at 10:25 p.m. tonight. And she will set at 5:11 a.m. tomorrow morning. 89% of the moon's face is already illuminated, heading up toward full moon, coming up this Saturday at 3:46 p.m. Huna is the first of 10 moon phases. No, certainly not the first. It's, I don't know, around about the 10th. I guess it's, oh no, it's the first of 10 in Poipoi, which is the second Anahulu, or the second Hawaiian moon week. And it's said that the name Huna reflects the fact that this moon hides its horns for the first time on this moon. So the moons on previous nights appeared to have horns to them. Huna means a hidden secret or hidden, also a minute particle, grain, crumb, gram, speck, tiny bit, a scrap, minutia, small, little, or powdery. And we have planting recommendations today of ipu gourds, as well as the root plants which Huna or hide in the soil. So good reason to get out there for sure. And also interested, too, I was looking at the Bishop Museum Planetarium website and always mining that great website for information that we can share about the planetary movements over the year. There's nothing for this week, but I was looking at the rising and setting times of the sun. And shockingly, today, according to the Bishop Museum Planetarium website, there's a 21-minute difference in the rising time of the sun between Lihue, Kauai, and Hilo on the Big Island. 21 minutes difference of when the sun rises. That really blew me away. I had to look back at a map at Hawaii and realize this is a big place. Mm-hmm. And we also span different latitudes as well. Mm-hmm. So I'm not quite sure why that is, but it caught me off guard to learn about that.
And it can affect certain plants quite a bit.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Indeed. So we are going to look at some notable news that is near and dear to our hearts or affecting us. And there is some rather large news coming out of the Big Island. Bishop Museum is selling Waipio Valley land as well as the Amy Greenwell Ethnobotanical Garden, a place near and dear to mine and so many people's hearts. It's the place I first attended a seed and plant exchange, and they have always done such a tremendous job hosting the community and displaying common and rare native plants as well as Hawaiian cultural traditions around growing food. And I know that Uncle Jerry Kononui has used it as his classroom many, many years. So we're really feeling for everybody there, Peter Van Dyke and the team. So we're sending our prayers to you that all can be bridged and resolved in a really good way. Amy Greenwell Ethnobotanical Garden closing to the public at the end of this month on January 31st. So please have a visit if you've never been, or have another visit. And Waipio Valley for sale. You told me that you spent some time down in Waipio.
I did, yeah. I lived in Waipio Valley for 3.5 years, and my son was born down there. It's an amazing, amazing spot. Its biodiversity is it's extending through the valley. There's little pockets where certain kinds of plants have been naturalized. And the shady environment really lends itself to, it's like a little greenhouse. It's pretty amazing. Coffee grows wild there. As a resident, I used to harvest it, shade-grown wild coffee. Mm-hmm. And to trim them, we'd just break the branches off and they'd come back. And the shade-grown is supposed to be the richer of the ways to produce a richer coffee. Also, cacao grew extremely well in Waipio, so we would make Waipio mochas,
yeah.
through processing both of those beans.
And you mentioned that you saw yerba mate growing there as well.
I did, yeah. We were talking about how mate can naturalize to an area, and there were a couple patches that we could visit that the residents would just go take care of by just weeding a little bit around them and enjoying the bountiful harvest of the valley. It was an incredible place, and I am amazed that it's going to be sold off. There are private inholdings in the valley, which will obviously stay with their owners, but a lot of taro farmers rent. They have ag leases through right now, and so that might be changing a lot. I don't know. It might not. I mean, whoever buys it might just keep it the same, but it's a rural, beautiful place, and I really hope that it stays protected no matter what.
Indeed. And we're watching from somewhat of a distance here on Kauai. Of course, this is a very important issue for people on the Big Island and the west and the east side and the Hamakua coast, and so many generations represented there. And I know that Bishop Museum is at least stating that they're really going to work to find the right landowner.
Mm-hmm.
And as we see here on Kauai, that really makes all the difference. So for both the Amy Greenwell Garden as well as Waipio Valley, we send our fondest well wishes to everyone involved that we could, the end result means we can be even better stewards moving forward. So
aho, we
it
love
could
you,
be good
Waipio.
News after all. And right now, we are joined on the phone by the legislative chair for the Hawaii Farmer Union United. It's Simon Russell calling us from over on Maui. Today is the start of the legislative season, and there's some exciting legislation coming on board for us to move sustainable agriculture forward. Simon, thanks for calling.
And thank you, Paul. And an aloha out to my homeland on Kauai. It's where I was raised, and right there in your area. I remember when KKCR first came online, so it's a real pleasure being with you.
Fantastic. Well, we're happy to be one of the first shows that led off the station, and while I was not there at that time, we keep passing the baton of the Garden Show to folks who can find the time and have the passion. So we're really grateful to speak with you today. I know this is an important day for the legislature to be heading off, and grateful that we have advocates for sustainable organic agriculture and other methods of eco-agriculture, and Hawaii Farmers Union is definitely one of those. So I'm wondering if you could give us a little bit of a background. You were sharing with me a little bit when in our discussion yesterday about the multi-year effort of the Hawaii Farmers Union to bring positive change.
Indeed I can. Thank you, Paul, for this awesome opportunity to share. Certainly, I am the legislative committee chair for the Hawaii Farmers Union, a state chapter. We now consist of 9 chapters on all islands with almost 1,000 members. So we're getting stronger, and from that strength comes lots of great ideas which kind of percolate through the minds of our legislative committee people, including your own Don Heacock over there on Kauai, and many others from across the state with lots of experience working with lawmakers. And so we've come up with a couple initiatives at the state level. The most important one that we've considered, in my opinion, in our opinion, is what we're calling on-farm mentoring, to garner that knowledge of our kupuna and really actually to procure it. So we're asking a ledge for about $500,000 this session, which will be subject to the money committees, by the way. But initially we're asking for $500,000 to spread across five, including Mo'opi, not including Ni'i'au or Lanai'i, although there is a provision in the bill should kupuna on those islands feel that they would like to share their mana'o about what we're terming whole systems of agriculture, and also sustainable agriculture as defined by USDA. So those are two types of ag that we've selected within the body of that bill. So that's how it works. The House, it's a bicameral legislature, meaning there's a, you know, there's a House and there's a Senate, and they decide what happens. So the House Ag Committee will advance a version of a bill, and the Senate Ag Committee will advance a version of a bill. Hopefully they're the same, and in this case they are the same. So when those bills go before the committees and they hear them, then they move forward in the process. And then when they get out of the Ag Committee, they'll go before the money committees, and those guys will look at the bill and decide whether or not to take it forward. So we're hoping the state of Hawaii will be able to afford to garner the knowledge of our kupuna to share with the young farmers all that they know, because as you know, the average age of farmers in Hawaii is somewhere around 65 years old, meaning within a generation, we lose a whole lot of information, and that's why we picked this topic as our highest priority this year and previous years, because we don't want to lose information. It's vital for our agricultural communities. So we're looking at helping those folks. The primary reason for giving the kupuna money is so they can actually stop farming, pay somebody else to run their operations, and then teach. Because wow. we've had experience trying to teach and farm at the same time. It's very difficult.
Indeed. So I'm imagining that you have a handful of people in mind who are ready to make that transition. So that I imagine that rather than just a theoretical idea that, gee, wouldn't this be great, that you've actually spoken to some of the kupuna farmers who are happy to be taking this track to transferring their knowledge and the keys to the tractor.
Indeed. Yes, we have. We have two of them on Maui presently. I have some and including your very Ray Maki on Kauai, and quite a few on Hawaii Island would be running think the director of the Department of Agriculture will be the one picking them, and then the will be the overseeing body.
We're having difficulty with your signal. If you have a better spot to stand, I'm not sure if you're on the cellular.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Reality, no worries.
Is that a little better?
That's a lot better.
Oh, okay.
Thanks so much. So you were saying that you were describing the selection process of the Kupuna farmers.
Right. So the director of the Department of Agriculture will be the selector, and the oversight will be provided by the Hawaii Farmers Union Education Committee, which we already have programs in motion that work alongside of what you might know as Go Farm. And also on Maui, we call it Farm Apprentice Mentoring. So we have some mentors already who've been mentoring younger farmers, but we're looking for more funds because it's urgent that we would garner this knowledge as soon as possible. As the years tick by, people pass on to the next dimension and we lose their knowledge.
Right. Well, that's really exciting. So that's one check. And then what is the other bill that Hawaii Farmers Union is creating and supporting?
So the other one is pretty exciting. That one's called nutrient cycling, and we've had this concept of coming up with a statewide system, what we call regional nutrient cycling centers. You might imagine it as farm to table to farm, where we take all waste streams and we that are organic in nature, not obviously things like biosolids or trash itself, but organic waste streams, think food waste, slaughterhouse waste, mulch, tree waste, and we turn it into very high humate content compost, as well as things like biochar, vermicompost, IMOs from the method known as Korean natural farming or natural farming. So we want to generate these soil fertility centers with easy access from all of our ag communities, because truly our mission, the Hawaii Farmers Union mission, is to support vibrant and prosperous agriculture communities statewide. And we think it starts with obviously with the farmer and with the soil. So those two ideas are right at the top of the list. We have a whole list of other things, but being that the legislature won't give you too many chances to ask for stuff, we usually just ask for one or two things every year. And so we've been asking for a while for this. And fortunately, we've got some friends in the ledge. And so we're hoping that we'll have a good shot at it this year.
Fantastic. So I'm wondering about the acquisition of all of this waste stream and just trying to scrounge together materials myself for compost at various times. I've often thought, well, gosh, probably most of the waste coming out of kitchens and restaurants is going to feed the pigs that live around the island, meaning pig farmers, mm-hmm. or other people who already have composting operations. But is that not the case? You think a lot of it's
going
to the landfill?
No, not really. On Maui alone, we bury 27,000 tons a year into the landfill, mostly from the hotels. I don't think they don't want the liability of giving it to pig farmers. I'm not sure about Kauai,
right,
if the hotels, but I actually worked for the Kauai Marriott for some time, and we threw away incredible, incredible piles of stuff, just huge piles every day. I was one of the culprits of that because I worked in the kitchen as a chef. And so coming from that experience and knowing that the Western so-called civilization throws away 40% of its food between the farm and after the table. All of that turned back into nutrients. So that's this nutrients thing, that we would capture almost all, if not all, waste streams that are viable for farming and help farmers out by giving them low-cost fertilizers. Just, we know the inputs is one of the major parts of the cost of doing business farming.
Indeed.
You bet. Hi, Simon. This is Eileen. Thanks for being here.
We're very excited about all that. So we'll see what happens in the ledge this year. There's a lot going on. I mean, the medical cannabis issue.
Oh, we've lost you again.
Last year.
Have you moved, or is it just the clouds parting?
I don't know. Is that better?
Okay, thank you. So
must be. I'm down on the farm, so it's not the best reception. I'm planting mangosteen and dragon fruits.
Oh, fantastic.
Simon, hi, this is Eileen. Thanks so much for coming today. I have a question for you.
Go ahead, Eileen.
Thanks so much. In this nutrient cycling bill that you guys are going to be presenting to the legislature, I am wondering, you know, I see this closing the loop attempt. You know, you've got your stuff growing on the farm, it goes to the table, and then all that needs to come back to the farm so we can just close the loop, you know, and make all those all that organic material available for the farmers to put it into their compost or their vermibins or whatever they're going to do to break it down. And so I do know that we have composting businesses here on Kauai, and they get a lot of their green waste from the county. So what I'm wondering is, do you guys visualize this nutrient cycling to be involving the county, or do you see it more with places like hotels and restaurants and things like that that are just dumping so much food? I've witnessed that firsthand, too. It's crazy. Yeah. How do you visualize that, or to include all of it?
Thanks, Eileen. We will definitely work with the counties. Here in Maui, the county subcontracts out the solid waste management of its waste to the organic waste stream of green waste and so forth to a company called Eco Composting. What I don't appreciate about that operation is they put biosolids into it, and then there's heavy metal content in the material itself. So I can't use that as an organic farmer. It's not permissible under USDA organic standards. Mm-hmm. And I don't really like heavy metals that persist in the soil either. So mm-hmm. we would like to separate those waste streams. So for starters, we're going to have a pilot program. So this bill is for a pilot project on Maui where we will see the viability of these different types of soil fertility amendments, meaning high humic compost, biochar, vermicompost, and other waste streams. Because I've seen all kinds of trash in the green waste also, and that's not organic. So we want to figure out a method to have some quality control in the organic matter. I've seen giant truckloads of green waste at the dump infused with, say, branches that have been sprayed with herbicide and so on and so forth, mixed mm-hmm. with McDonald's wrappers and what have you. And I even have had masks and snorkels and fins in my compost. So we're going to try and keep it pure mm-hmm. to the highest degree possible. I think we can do that. There's a lot of land clearing operations that we can take the organic waste streams from, and we specifically want to look at slaughterhouse waste also from the fish companies and the cattle companies and create a product called tankage, which they're making on Oahu. Mm-hmm. And
yes.
That's a little tricky with the health codes, but we think that when we work with the health department, we'll be able to find a happy compromise in there somewhere.
Well, I applaud you on that attempt to separate that kind of green waste from, like, vegetable waste and so forth, because I am also concerned about glyphosate in my green waste, and I don't want it in my vegetables as a, you know, getting it secondarily out of the soil that the compost was put in. So I think there's a huge need for this, and I'm so interested to follow you and see where this goes and to support you.
Awesome. Well, we'll have the opportunity to support these bills by email testimony. One thing I might request of the listeners or advise everybody is that at capital.hawaii.gov. It's very easy to write supporting or opposing testimony for a bill. Matter of fact, I think Hawaii is one of the top in the country as far as being able to give remote testimony, because we're so spread out across the state. So the legislature has a wonderful website, capital.hawaii.gov, and you can just type in the bill number in the space provided, and then when it has a hearing, they usually give a 48-hour notice. As the legislative committee chair, I always send out a heads-up to all the Farmers Union members as well as our partners and affiliates and friends to please support such and such a bill. Pretty rarely do we oppose bills, only in really extreme cases, because we don't have a lot of energy to follow every bill. But certainly we want to support the things that we support, and with your help, we can definitely make that happen.
Mm-hmm. Do we have bill numbers on those yet, Simon?
Not quite.
Yeah.
I'm requesting that. They've been submitted to the what happens is the introducer will submit the bill to the leadership in the House or the Senate, and then the Senate will assign them committees and numbers, and they have not been assigned numbers. Although, for those legislative nerds out there, you can go in the archives of the capital.hawaii.gov website, and you can look them up from last session, and the mentoring was called SB 380, and the nutrient cycling was called SCR 80, and so that was Senate Bill 380 and Senate Concurrent Resolution 80. Mm-hmm. So this session, they're coming back with probably different names.
Great. Well, thank you. Yeah, I so look forward to seeing that waste coming into our gardens instead of the landfill. That is so, so, so exciting. Thank you, Simon.
Yeah, and we have some top-notch people to teach young folks how to use that waste stream also to grow just really nutrient-dense, wonderful food as well. So we're so excited to see these programs working in tandem. And also, I might add, if I have another couple seconds, that
you sure can,
what we want to do is we want to feed lots of people, including this very large convention coming up on Oahu. It's going to be called the International Union for the Conservation of Nature World Conservation Congress, if you can remember all that.
We're
and
so
10,000 people are coming to Hawaii. It's like the top climate scientists in the world. And I'm actually the organizer to get them as much local food as possible. So for those farmers out there, give Paul a call, and he'll give you my contact, and we can work together to feed our friends from around the world who are trying to save the world. They're coming to Hawaii to talk about it. It's a really diverse group of scientists from around the world. I think 180 countries will be here in September.
Is there a budget for that or not so much?
I will know that pretty soon because I'm sitting on the Board of Agriculture with the Department of Agriculture. I'm the Maui representative. Mm-hmm. We're working on it really hard, and we will have a budget eventually. I'm not exactly sure what it is, but I've been told by the director of the department to look up as many farmers as I can and see if we can come up with a plan to get as much food as possible to the Hawaii Convention Center, mm-hmm. the Honolulu Convention Center, come the end of August and September. So the clock's a ticking on that one, but I have been able to wrangle quite a few farmers into agreeing to grow some good produce and also local meat for that event. So it's looking good so far.
Wonderful. I want to let people know you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is In the Garden on the Farm. We're here until 1 o'clock, and we're speaking with Simon Russell. He is the legislative committee chair for the Hawaii Farmers Union United. And if you hadn't guessed already by some of the things, he showed his hand a little bit, but he's also a farmer. He's from Kauai originally, currently on Maui. And Simon, I'd love to redirect our discussion to some aspects of your farming operation, your diversified tropical crops that you're growing. And maybe you could say a little bit about your farm, and I'm excited to hear specifically about your sugarcane production for the juice market.
Ah, well, thank you for asking about that, Paul. Yeah, I am a commercial organic farmer here on Maui. I grew up conventionally farming for my mother's business at Po'oku up by Power Line on Princeville. We had a nursery operation called Ahunui Nursery, and we operated for about 20 years. I moved to Maui to farm with my brother over here. I'm farming tropical fruits and vegetables, quite a bit of sugar cane for the local juice market. We have a group of stores over here. It's kind of a chain called The Pharmacy, starting with F-A-R-M, Pharmacy, and the owner has contracted me to deliver about 1,000 pounds a week of cut sugar cane.
Wow.
And so I just basically deliver it to his store, and he juices it up, and that's his base for other drinks. And he mixes in, you know, ginger and sometimes dragon fruit. He's got a whole menu of different wonderful, tasty, healthy juices and health drinks that he puts sugar cane juice in.
Awesome.
That's a pretty easy crop to grow. I'm using Korean natural farming methods. So I use biological farming practices where I put biochar in the soil and inoculate the soil profile with IMO, and then I activate the indigenous microorganisms with various plant preparations, stimulants, biostimulants. They pretty much provide the fertility I need, so I don't have to buy much, which is a wonderful thing. It's very low cost.
What sort of soil are you on there?
I'm farming in what's called oxysol, or in some cases ultisol. It's red clay that has very large amounts of pineapple plastic stuck everywhere, and you dig down like 3 feet, you'll still find pineapple plastic. So these are old pineapple fields on the north shore of Maui. The wind blows about 20 to 30 miles an hour every day of the year, except lately. It's been variable.
Oh, my goodness.
And not the optimum growing conditions.
No.
And yes.
And I would imagine a crop like sugarcane, you get a lot of lodging, or potential at least. Or is that not the case? Do the culms not get blown over in the wind if you don't do it right or something?
Occasionally, but I grow in rows. I actually use it for a windbreak. It's very wind resistant, which is why it's one of the main crops around Maui for the last few hundred years. And so not particularly. Occasionally, if it starts to lean over, I'll tie it. I will just get a giant rope and kind of ratchet it together to keep it from sitting on the ground. But typically not. I grow in like 6 foot wide rows, and they tend to support each other for the most part.
Mm-hmm. And what about the cropping season? Do you plant year round, or is there a particular time of years that you do?
I do. I stagger all my plantings. I actually just finished planting last month. And so I have an all year round harvest, tailored for my one client pretty much for 1,000 pounds a week. Mm. I'm getting about 2 pounds per square foot for my row crops.
And when you're harvesting it, Simon, what are the sweetest portions to harvest? Are they the ones that I've heard that it's the ones that are kind of falling down? So I would think the outermost pieces. Is there a selection process that you go through for harvesting?
I go for, you know, the maturity before they flower and the diameter. So I'm kind of going for weight. I haven't sampled every different one, but everybody seems very happy. So I try and harvest them when they're about 2 inches in diameter. And, you know, one cane can be 20 pounds. And I'm getting about 75 cents a pound. So it's like $15 for one cane.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's pretty good. It is quite a bit of work to get it up and running and be sustainable. And the rats really like it also. That's one a bit of an issue to control the rats. And we have mongoose here, and they chew on it too. And then we get these bacterial infections going, and it kind of is an issue. That's why I don't really want to grow it any larger unless I start moving to a different property, because I can't control the pests.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which was one of the reasons they used to burn. I think it's a very good reason to burn, because it gets rid of all of the aphids love it too, and the ants, of course. So unless you can get in there and pull every leaf off and really enhance your biology, your beneficials, then you're going to have lots of aphids and ants. And it's a fine balance between controlling the pests and losing money.
For sure. And treating the earth the way we know we must.
Exactly.
So if I understand, then the flowering is not a seasonal thing. It's just based on when that particular culm reaches maturity, or is there seasonality to the flowering too?
I mean, that's my experience. The flowering's about 9 months or so. That's a good question. I don't know if it's seasonal or not. I don't think so. Okay. I think it's at the end of the life cycle when it's, you know, pretty much done. But to be honest with you, Paul, I don't know. I guess you got me there.
And, well, I didn't mean to do that.
don't know everything.
And then just a final one that, for me at least, is variety. We have so many Native Hawaiian varieties, and then we see this purple one that seems to grow about three times as large and fast as everything else. Do you grow different varieties, or how do you make that selection?
You know, I was the varieties that I'm growing came with my farm that I'm leasing, so... I'm told they are Hawaiian varieties, native varieties of ko. So two of the original seven canoe crops. They've been there for quite a long time, and it's been my honor to work with them and, enhance the soil, health and really watch them produce. So one's red and one's yellow. The yellow one tends to have a much clearer liquid that some people find more desirable, and then other people actually like the darker liquid from the red one more because they said it has more minerals. So one of my stores, I sell to a health food store, and they only want the yellow one. And then the pharmacy only wants the red one. And so I'm, you know, still trying to figure out how much of each to grow. Like at first I only grew the yellow one because everybody told me that that's what people wanted to buy. But then the juice bar said, well, we like the minerals, so you got to grow the red one now.
Thank you so much for sharing we spoke about it for 5 minutes, and you probably spent countless hours developing, you know, that knowledge that could be, you know, made in a very general sense, concise, down to just a few minutes. So thank you for sharing your farming knowledge with us, and I have a really strong feeling that we could learn so much from you in the future. I hope you'd consider joining us on the show again.
Absolutely, Paul. Hopefully I can be in the studio live one of these days. I do love Kauai, so try to get back there as much as I can.
Well, we'll expect you home sometime coming up.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Thank you, Simon.
Thanks for all of your work, Simon.
Indeed.
Aloha to KKCR and you, Eliza, and you, Paul.
Thank you so much. Aloha.
And all the listeners.
We love them. Aloha. So that's Simon Russell of the Hawaii Farmers Union United, also a certified organic farmer over there on Maui. And we're here until 1 o'clock. It's myself, Paul. It's herself, Eileen, and we're here for In the Garden on the Farm. And we want to jump into more of a garden sort of scale process that has been very popular and very effective. And best of all, Eileen has experience doing it, so we're not just reading out of a text, but we're talking about personal experience here. We're talking about lasagna gardening.
Mm.
Growing lasagna, right?
Oh, almost.
That would be nice if there was a lasagna plant.
You could be growing your ingredients. Okay, yeah, so I am here today as a co-host and guest to discuss lasagna gardening. And it's also named sheet mulching. So you may be familiar with it as sheet mulching, but in 1998, a lady named Patricia Lanza wrote a book called Lasagna Gardening, and so she coined the sheet mulching that we may be used to hearing about as lasagna gardening. And she did it specifically because she was a mother of many and didn't have a lot of time, and her body wasn't necessarily wanting to dig into some hard earth, so she started researching other ways to deliver organic material to the soil. So lasagna gardening is a method of soil enrichment, and It is basically a compost pile constructed in place. So in other words, you would make your compost pile on top of an area where you'll be planting your garden, which eliminates the need to transport your compost, rip, fork, or till, and minimizes weeding and watering.
That sounds really sensible.
Yeah, it sure does. And, you know, in my 20s, maybe I didn't mind hauling everything and saying, I can do it, which I did. but now I'm a little older. I'm a mom also. I have other places I need to spend my time too. And it's so much easier on my body. I'm loving it. So I'd love to share with you methods that I've found successful in lasagna gardening here in Hawaii, maybe in contrast to some ways that they would do it on the mainland also. So first you want to just think about, do I have an area where I'd like to put a garden in about 3 months? Maybe I have an existing garden, but I have another area that I want to develop, or another section of my garden that's still raw grass. So step one would be to choose a site. Where's my site? Does it have good drainage? What's the sun path? What's the wind path? What kind of pests do I have in the area? Do I need to fence it later? Do I not? You know, you're going to choose your site wisely when doing this. And the trade-off with this kind of this method is that you're placing you're going to place all of your ingredients for your compost pile right on the area where you're going to be gardening. So don't expect to use it for a little while. You're constructing the compost pile. It's going to have to break down, and then it'll be available to you. But there is a little cheat sheet shortcut on that I'll let you know.
I like the permission to come back later.
Yeah.
Rather than, like, you have to come back later this afternoon.
Oh, yeah. That feels good. And you can be doing a lot of other gardening in your spaces that are immediately ready, and then, boom, have this other spot laid out for you in a few months. You have time to think about it. You have time to put your, you know, seeds in trays if needed and all that good stuff. So you've chosen your site, and now you're going to mow. So you're going to mow that to take off some of the seed heads, if there are any, and you're going to get the grass as flush as you can with the earth. So when you build your pile, it's not going to be all wobbly and falling over or uneven with weird pockets in it.
Or the roots of very large grasses that probably would just eat up your lasagna before it baked.
Very true. And that's the next point I wanted to make, was to remove your noxious weeds. Now, the point of this lasagna gardening also is it's a no-till method, right? There are a few exceptions to this rule. Like, what are our noxious weeds in Hawaii? We've got guinea grass. You could definitely, if it's going to be a small area, dig them out. You know, if not, you need a really, really, really thick pile of compost of your lasagna to be able to help that come down.
Even small trees like halicoa or African tulip.
Thank you.
Even if it's a small tree and you cut it flush with the ground, mm-hmm. it's coming back.
Yeah.
You'll have to pick it out.
So choose a wise site. You don't want a bunch of trees or stumps in our site. Yeah. And Bermuda grass can also be pretty annoying. Nut grass is also a problem. Now, I wouldn't worry so much about a little bit of nut grass. If you can see it, just pull it out with a dandelion puller to make sure to get that root, or use a fork to loosen the earth a little bit. No flipping. Don't flip your soil. We don't want to upset the microbiology in there. But if we do see some nut grass that you can get out, go ahead and get it out. If you have a whole patch of nut grass, maybe not the best site choice. So you might want to go to another spot. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about, I know you've talked about nut grass other days. We'll probably talk about it a lot again. And so now we've chosen the site. We've mowed to get it really flush. We've removed our noxious weeds. And that's where we are. We're just about ready to start constructing. Also, if you are really concerned about weeds, weed seeds, weed roots, you can use a shovel and just take off that top layer of sod. you know, that's adding a little bit more work than she says that you need to do. But here in Hawaii, we're in a little bit of a more vigorous environment, so I do take a little bit extra measures to just make it easier for myself in the long run.
So but if you leave it there, it's more organic matter that's going to break down and feed your plants.
Oh, so true. In preference, I would like to leave it there. It's just if I'm really concerned about that kind of noxious weed.
Scott Pomeroy taught us to take a shovel, scalp the sod, and turn it upside down. Just a one flip of just the first inch or two, and then you so that could be, if you have a more aggressive grass, that might help out.
That could be incorporated and still make that organic matter available. Yeah, you're not tossing it into a different green waste bin. So there was step one, and then step two is adding a 5-inch layer of brown or dry. So examples of this could be, and I'm sure Paul might have some too, weed-free straw. And I've also used the tops of cane grass, dried, the tops of guinea grass, dried, and lemongrass. Now, these three grasses, you don't want to get the stalk necessarily, at least I haven't in my smaller gardening experience, that I don't want to use the stalk of that plant as the dry material. First of all, it's not that dry because it's pretty thick and it's holding moisture. But the tops dry really, really nicely. And if you have a greenhouse, you can put them in the greenhouse where they won't be getting rained on and flip them every once in a while, chop them up, and that makes a really, really dry, a good dry layer. And that seems to be the challenge with building any compost pile here in Hawaii is that, gosh, where am I going to find dry material because it's always so moist here. So you can dry your own. You can make it. Also, some other things could be dry leaves that are put through a lawnmower and caught in the grass catcher. That crushes them up and breaks them up. So when they lay... when they lie in the layering, then it's going to create, the crunched up leaves are going to create airspace that keeps it from getting pathogens. And just if the leaves lay flat against each other, then there's no airspace and it gets all slimy and kind of pathogenic in there. So if you have the...
and your nose tells you there's a problem.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, so you could do that. Wood chips also, but no camphor or eucalyptus. And sawdust from safe wood that is not heat treated. Borate's okay. Newspaper, crumpled newspaper, ripped up cardboard, all those things make great dry layer. So we had step one, mowing to make it flush, removing the noxious weeds. And then we had step two, adding a 5-inch layer of brown or dry. And then after each layer, please water. Water your little area because this is going to help all the microbiology stay wet and alive and proliferate.
What comes next?
Step three. I did write down my steps just so I could speak clearly about it. Step three would be adding a layer of green. It'd be a 3-inch layer. The green is also a wet material. Examples of this would be manure, like bunny manure, or if you have a horse and the horse is not being wormed, you could definitely use that manure. If your horse is being wormed with something like ivermectin, a common wormer for horses, you want to be very sure that that compost or that manure has decomposed for at least a year before you get it in there.
For what period of time after the horse has the ivermectin? Would you consider the horse clean, essentially?
Oh, I'm saying that if the horse is always given ivermectin on a schedule, then once that manure comes out, you want to make sure that's decomposed for about a year before you're utilizing it.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Grass clippings, I don't do that. I don't use grass clippings because...
You don't have them.
Yeah. Well, because I'm just a little hypersensitive about weed seeds. So I don't want to put that into my microenvironment.
Right on.
If I knew for sure my compost pile was getting hot enough with a compost thermometer, it would not be a problem. Animal bedding and yard waste. So those are examples. So then we've got our step one, mowing, removing noxious weeds. Step two, adding a layer, a 5-inch layer of brown. Step three, adding a 3-inch layer of green. And some, a couple more examples of that could be kitchen waste, coffee grounds, seaweed, blood meal, worm castings, all those goodies. And then water. You're watering every layer. Step four is adding another, a 5-inch layer of compost or garden soil on top of every wet layer. So it's basically like building a compost pile. You're going to be going dry, wet soil, dry, wet soil, dry, wet soil, and then watering after each layer. Okay, and then when I add that layer, the 5-inch layer of compost or garden soil, I inoculate it with IMOs. And that's been a wonderful bumper-upper for me. I've really noticed that my plants are growing very vigorously and disease-resistant with the addition of the IMOs. I did run a little experiment in my garden and did half of my beds with IMO and half without, and I did notice a difference.
Wow.
And I asked my friends and people who were really closely related to that garden and were watching it noticed a difference too.
So what's the final cap on the lasagna garden when
okay.
you've done your successive layers?
Okay, and then once you've done all your successive layers, you're trying to reach a height of about 18 inches to 3 feet. Oh. And you don't have to construct the whole thing at once. You can do it as you gain your materials. I like doing it all at once because then, boom, in 3 months, I'm ready to go. So I'm going to end it with a carbon layer and watering it. And I used, so you're going to end with a carbon layer, excuse me. And because we live in a high rainfall area, which has the potential to wash away nutrients quickly, I then, after my last carbon layer, and soil and water, then I put cardboard down. And I put a layer of cardboard down on top of it that all faces the same way. So water can, when rain hits, it can hit the cardboard and go in between all those cracks and filter in. And then I topped mine with a bunch of ginger and heliconia cuttings, not with the root on or anything, but just to hold the cardboard down and keep the wind from blowing it away. You could also use compost cloth, burlap, cotton blanket, anything like that, just to protect it from the rain washing it away. On the mainland now, it'll take from 3 months to a year for all this to break down. But in Hawaii, we have a really quick cycle with the heat in the water and no overwintering. So we can get a good place to plant in about 3 months. There's one variation I'd like to add, Paul, and that is that if you did want to plant on this right away, you could apply a 3-inch layer of compost right on top of your last carbon layer. And then voila, you've got an area where you can plant directly. You can sow your seeds directly in it, or you can put your transplants right in and plant accordingly. Because if you've got a 3-inch layer of compost on top that you're planting right in, you probably want to have some shallow rooted plants. So, things like lettuce, squash, celery, some of the mustards, some of those things would be wise to, so research your root depth and then plant a shallow root depth plant the first time. And then by the end of that round, all your goodies are going to be decomposted and you're going to be able to plant something with deeper roots.
Wow. No digging required.
Not required.
Gotta love it. Lasagna gardening. Sure sounds like it's worth giving a try. I look forward to seeing your lasagna garden someday and see how you construct them. That was very well described in my mind as you gave us those steps. So thank you so much, Eileen.
Good.
Thank you again for coming to the show. Sadly, we're at the end, as it often happens. I have a quick announcement, which is the Kauai Statewide Food Safety Management Act. Informational session is happening tomorrow, Thursday, January 21st, from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Kauai Community College OSET Room 105. So very important for people who commercially produce produce and any kind of food, really, to find out what these new federal regulations are going to, how they might impact production here on Kauai. Hopefully there'll be a chance for us to air our concerns as well as us be informed of what they're already planning. So, Eileen Irvin, thank you again for joining us on our program today. Super fun to have you.
Paul, thank you so much for having me. Thanks for doing the show.
Absolutely.
It's a great resource.
Thank you. And we want to thank our other guests on the show today, Simon Russell, the legislative chair for the Hawaii Farmers Union United. And until next time, we want to encourage you to stay tuned for Kauai Vibrations with Tracy from 1 to 3. And please tune in again next week for In the Garden on the Farm for more stimulating conversation on our relationship with the life of the land that gives us life. And much love from KKCR Ohana to you.
Ahui ho. You are tuned to Kauai Community Radio, KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Hale Iva. This is Tracy with Kauai Vibrations. Big mahalo to Paul and Eileen for another wonderful edition of In the Garden on the Farm, and a big mahalo to Simon for calling in, letting us know about the wonderful bills that the farmers, Hawaii Farmers Union, whatever. Sorry, I don't know exactly. But anyway, some really good bills that are being introduced into legislature to help sustain agriculture here in the state of Hawaii. And thank you so much for tuning in. This KKCR program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Heaven on Earth, Kauai Marine and Mower, and Bikram Yoga.
Heaven on Earth starts here. Organically grown, GMO-free vegetable starts available at Hoku Foods in Kapa'a, Kauai Seascapes Nursery in Kalihiwai Ridge, and Saturday morning market next to Kauai Mini Golf. More information at heavenonearthstarts@gmail.com.
Kauai Marine and Mower, located in Old Kapa'a Town, is proud to underwrite this KKCR program. Kauai Marine and Mower features Honda garden and lawn equipment and also Echo Power Equipment. 823-0556.
Bikram Yoga Kauai, located in Kapa'a, provides authentic Bikram Yoga. A 90-minute beginner series is practiced in a heated studio with newly remodeled hot showers and changing rooms. All levels welcome. Improves physical health and overall well-being. Boutique open and classes available 7 days a week. KauaiBikramYoga.com or 823-9642.
Mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. On Sunday, I had the good honor to attend Stuart Hollinger's CD release party for his brand new release, which is entitled Endangered Species. And I thought I would play a track. This one's called YOLO. Once again, Stuart Hollinger just released his second album. He actually won a Nahoku Award for his first release for Dangerous Crossings. And here we go with Endangered Species. And I'm going to actually have Stuart here in the studio in the middle of February and talk story with him and play some of his music. But I thought I'd give you a little taste of it. YOLO from Stuart Hollinger's Endangered Species. Thank you so much for tuning in to Kauai Community Radio.